Shabbat Shalom. This week, we read from the double Torah portion of Matot Maaseh. It begins by telling us about the decisive victory the Israelites had over the five kingdoms of the Midianites. With their military accomplishments, they passed through what is today northeastern Saudi Arabia and encamped on the east bank of the Jordan River, across from the ancient city of Jericho. If you have been to the country of Jordan and stood at this spot, you know that Israel feels very close. Climb up to any hilltop and you can see for miles into the land of Israel. Indeed, Moses, the leader of the Israelites, who does not have permission to enter the land of Israel, will be commanded by God to climb Mount Nebo, also in this region, to take in a view of the promised land before he dies. At this time, you can imagine the excitement building. The Israelites had traveled in the desert for 40 years. The slave generation died out. A new generation, one that is powerful and unafraid, has risen. And before them awaits their destination, the land of Israel. Can you take in just how momentous the occasion is? They know the stories of their forefathers and how Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were promised this land for their descendants. They know that here they are destined to thrive and grow, be more numerous than the stars in the sky and the sand at the seashore. So, this request in chapter 32 of the book of Numbers in our Torah portion might come as a shock. We read, the Reubenites and the Gadites own cattle in very great numbers. Noting that the lands of Yazer and Gilad were a region suitable for cattle, the Gadite and Reubenite leaders came to Moses, Eleazar the priest, and the chieftains of the community and said, the land that God has conquered for the community of Israel is cattle country, and your servants have cattle. It would be a favor to us if this land were given to your servants as a holding. Do not move us across the Jordan River. Standing at the door to the promised land, not having stepped foot inside it yet, two tribes, and later two and a half tribes, ask for permission to settle right where they are, where it is greener, lush, and better for their cattle, outside of the land of Israel. They make this request of Moses and Eleazar the priest. How should Moses respond? How would you respond? Isn't this a punch in the gut to the Israelites? Isn't it a betrayal of God and the Israelite experience? Let's break it down to understand how it's problematic. The Reubenites and Gadites are refusing to enter the land, their destination, what they've been aiming toward for 40 years. In today's world, this might just be equivalent to driving to Orlando and then refusing to enter the happiest place on earth. God had promised the land to the Israelite tribes. Not accepting your parcel of land within the borders of Israel might be a betrayal of God. If the Israelites are more than tribes, but truly one people, one nation, aren't these tribes asking for their future to no longer be bound up with the future of their brothers and sisters, or at least their cousins? The land of Canaan is not empty and ready to be settled by the Israelites. It is the land of the Amorites, the Girgashites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, and the Perizzites. The battles ahead will be bloody. By remaining outside of Israel, aren't they acting with cowardice for not putting their lives at risk along with the rest of the nation? Finally, Jewish observance is land-based. Its focus is on Israel, and there are mitzvot that can only be practiced there. These tribes are excluding themselves from practicing the fullness of God's commandments. There are a lot of arguments against the tribes of Reuben and Gad remaining outside the land. Now, if Moses was only processing this side of the argument, against giving the tribes of Gad and Reuben permission to settle east of the Jordan, then he would have to say no to this request. But maybe there is some validity in their wishing to stay on the east bank, and Moses would need to weigh that in his response. The arguments in favor include, Reuben and Gad recognize their needs as tribes. Cattle grazing is land intensive and depletes the land of vegetation. By allowing them to stay outside of the promised land, they would be able to thrive without causing undue harm and lasting harm to the land. By settling east of the Jordan, they are, in effect, expanding the borders of Israel. The land is contiguous with that of the other tribes. And later, in the time of King David, the borders will expand well north and east of this area. Without their foothold in the land, King David's massive kingdom might never have transpired. And these tribes will also become a security barrier. They will be the first to fight incursions from the east. Ultimately, in 722 BCE, when the Assyrians attacked these tribes, they were the first of the 10 tribes to fall. It is possible that their fight enabled the two remaining tribes of Israel to stay safe from harm and undefeated. Despite all of these reasons to stay outside of the land, Moses doesn't hear the request as valid. He gets angry with the tribes and accuses them of risking bringing God's wrath on the Israelites. In response, the Reubenites and the Gadites suggest a compromise. They would fortify their cities on the east of the Jordan, freeing their soldiers to serve as shock troops in the conquest of the land of Canaan. They would be the first in all battles and would not return to their own homes until all of the tribes were fully settled and safe. This compromise was approved, and Moses declared, V'yitem neki'im me'adonai mi'Yisrael, v'yita'aretz hazot lachem lachuza lifnei Adonai. You shall be clear before God and before Israel, and this land shall be your holding under God. What we have here is the very beginning, the origin, the first instance of diaspora-Israel relations. It includes all of the components. One, who has say over what happens in mainland Israel? Do Israelites or Jews living outside the land have the right to impose beliefs and values on Israel? What are the rights of interested or invested parties who don't live within Israel's borders? Two, who is responsible over Israel's security, both financially and physically? Is it the responsibility of those who live in Israel alone? Three, how should those in Israel relate to those outside of the land? Do they need to honor the values and religious practice of those outside of Israel's borders? Our Torah portion describes a time when those inside and outside of Israel were still under one set of leaders, and the exchange between them was constant. They worked as one unit towards similar goals. They rose together in victories and success, and they suffered at the hands of the same tragedies. Today, reality is very different. Stated in a report by the Re'ut Group, I quote, on the Israeli side, there has been a weakening of many Israelis' sense of belonging together with Jews living outside of Israel. And the perception of Jewish identity is gradually becoming more national. These attitudes are strengthened by the lack of knowledge regarding Jewish life outside of Israel. At the same time, on the American side, especially in young liberal and progressive circles, Israel is becoming a polarizing factor in the face of issues related to Israeli state security policies and to religion and state. The attitude toward Israel is largely affected by the American Jews' own identity challenges, which also undermine the Jewish establishment in the U.S. and are accelerated by various factors such as the intergenerational gap and economic and social issues. In other words, the distance between the U.S. Jewish community and Israel is growing. Israel's president, Yitzhak Herzog, sees this widening distance as an equal risk to Israel and to the diaspora. To address it, he launched a new initiative, Kol Ha'am, the voice of the people, the president's initiative for a worldwide Jewish dialogue. This week, I participated in a meeting of this group. The purpose of this initiative is to establish a council that represents all voices and communities in the Jewish world to work jointly to address critical challenges. By crafting dialogue across geographic boundaries on equal footing, President Herzog is asserting that world Jewry needs to have a say in what transpires in our homeland. The message of this effort is clear. From the time of the ancient Israelites through to today, we must maintain our dialogue across the boundaries of the Jewish people. The risk of losing Jewish peoplehood is too great. And if we cannot bridge our divides, it might very well happen. The work ahead is significant, important, and possibly transformational. I wish President Herzog success in this effort. At every opportunity that I am given to contribute to it, I will. I am fully committed. By the way, you and I need not wait for this or any initiative to go forward to begin the process of engaging with Jews outside of our usual circles. We can take this challenge on ourselves. We can engage with Jews here in the U.S. and with those outside of our borders. When we take our summer trips to Europe and more exotic locations, and of course on our travels to Israel, we should take on this responsibility to strike up conversations, learn, and engage with others who approach their Judaism from a different perspective and worldview. We will all grow from these encounters. Our rabbi stated in the Jerusalem Talmud that when we act, we must do so in ways that earn the respect of both God and humanity. The rabbis learned this teaching from the verse in our Torah portion. The decision to start the first diaspora community ever was a good one, both in the eyes of God and our Israelite brethren. V'yitem nekiim me'Adonai m'Yisrael, v'yita ha'aretz hazot lachem lachuzah lifnei Adonai. You shall be clear, literally clean, faultless before God and before the Israelites, and this land shall be your holding under God. May our role as diaspora Jews, committed to and seeking a strong future for the Jewish people, be blessed by God and world Jewry alike. Shabbat Shalom.